So it started in 1998.
Sure, seemed like a good year to come up with a new calendar.
Why wouldn't they just start it like the year 2000? Make it like a nice round number.
I'm Andrew Riley, and this is Drupal Easy Podcast number 97. It's the first in 2013, unless you're in Ethiopia. Today with us, we have Mike Anello. How's it going, Mike?
Greetings, Andrew. It's going well. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year and happy belated birthday.
Thank you very much.
And Ryan is actually trying to find a new way across the polar ice cap, so he will not be with us today.
Yeah, if you've ever seen the Top Gear episode of where they try and drive to the North Pole, I think that's what Ryan is doing right
now. Ooh, that sounds like fun.
I'm not sure if he's in a vehicle or a dog sled. One of
them. Or both.
Hmm.
And we also have a special guest with us, Emma Jane Hogman. How's it going, Emma Jane?
Hey, it's going well. Happy New Year.
And you're no stranger to us in this show, but Happy New Year. So for those of us, or those of you who may not have heard prior episodes or haven't met Emma Jane before, she's kind of a Drupal extraordinaire author and trainer, and I always run into you at Drupal cons. You seem to be at every one.
I like to give that impression, yes, although I've definitely missed a couple, which is unfortunate.
Well, how many have you been to, do you know?
Oh, gosh. I would have to count. counting's hard. My first one was in Szeged, which was in 2008. And then I was in D.C. in 2009. And then what was the next European one? Paris. And Chicago. And now I'm going to go out of order. Denver, San Francisco, London.
London.
I missed Denmark, which I'm really sad about. Mm-hmm. I was in Germany. I'm up to 8. What am I missing? I think that's all of them. And I'm at 8 fingers.
So your first one, for some reason, I thought you had gone to DrupalCons earlier than Hungary.
No, Hungary was my first one, and it was so amazing. I mean, they've all been amazing. I don't have favorites. That's what I meant to say. They've all been awesome, and I love all of the organizers for dedicating their lives for that 9-month period, or however long it takes to really sink your teeth into a DrupalCon, and I've loved them all equally.
Lives and sanity.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you had to pick one as your favorite?
Well, you never forget your first.
There you go.
And also, I didn't know this before the show notes. You have a really low Drupal.org user number, 1773.
Yeah, I've been around for a long time. I don't know that this is true, but I have a memory that you used to need to be a Drupal.org user to download the code. And I don't think that that's necessarily true, but I just have that memory of it. I first came to Drupal in 2002 or 2003, looking for a code base for a multilingual site that I was building. And at the time, Drupal was the best open source project for dealing with multiple languages on a single system. Many of the other ones allowed you to do bilingual sites, but Drupal was one of the few, if not the only site at the time, that was a true multilingual site.
So between the time that you joined, which, I mean, had to be, what was that, 2006, 2007, somewhere around there?
I started participating in the community again in 2006, 2007, 2008, sort of in there. I did have a period of time where I was doing proprietary work / my own code base. It was supposed to be open sourced. Political things happened. It didn't get open sourced, which is always really frustrating. But I took a look at what I had built versus what open source communities had built. And I walked away from my code base. There was absolutely no point hanging on to it when I looked at what a community was capable of building compared to an individual. And then I had a period where I was doing WordPress and Drupal. And that was sort of 2005, 6, 7, maybe into 8. And then in 2008, I definitely was using Drupal exclusively by that point.
Yeah, it kind of surprises me that your first DrupalCon was Hungary, based on the fact that you were in the community for at least a couple, you know, I'd say 2 or 3 years prior to that DrupalCon. So it sounds like from what you just said that you weren't doing Drupal 100% of the time.
I wasn't active in the community. And I think there's a big difference between someone who's consuming a product and essentially reselling their services to make money, and someone who's made the decision to be actively involved in the community. If I think about it, I made the effort and I found the money to go to Hungary because I was getting ready for my first publication, which was Front End Drupal, co-authored with Konstantin Kafer. And that would have been my first opportunity to meet Konstantin and also to figure out whether or not I was writing a book that the community was actually going to be able to get behind. And I got to say, that was a pretty, pretty big travel bill, because I decided at the last minute, and last minute flights to Hungary are not cheap. But I decided that it was important. And after meeting the community and seeing how much friendship and support was available to people who were willing to put in the time, that's when I really became committed to sticking around and helping to build out this thing that I had been making my money off of.
And that first book, I mean, that had to have been a success. I mean, based on the number of times I've referred other people to it. I mean, I have a copy of it sitting on my shelf. It seemed like that type of publication probably kicked open a lot of doors for you in the community.
It was an interesting publication in that I hadn't thought about what the implications were of coming out with a low price point product were. I didn't think about how to make money off of the fact that I had a business card that people were paying for. And when people started coming out with their own courses that had front-end Drupal as a textbook, I sat up and went, wait a minute, you're making hundreds of dollars per student, and I'm making, you know, after royalty divided between all the rest of it, I'm making about $1 a book. So I think I might be doing this wrong. Mm-hmm. And it taught me a lot about marketing. It taught me a lot about what people need in terms of support and what they expect for not just the money that they invest, but also the time that they invest. If someone sits down and reads your book, they've invested a lot of time in that relationship. And it changes how people, I think, how they interact with you. I mean, it's sort of a, you know, you spend 400 and something pages, I think it is, reading someone's work, and you feel like you might know them a little bit. Right. So it was kind of a weird transition for me to go from virtually unknown in the community to people coming up to me and thanking me and telling me that they'd learned Drupal because of my book, and was just kind of like, oh, okay, well, I'm Canadian. Hi.
Well, I think
it was a lot of fun. It was.
Well, but I think what makes, you know, the two books stand out, and the second one is, which I think the last time you were on the podcast, we had you on for a Drupal User's Guide to talk about that. But so that's your second book. And
yeah,
I think the thing that makes it your books kind of special is your voice. Mm-hmm. I mean, and they're not dry textbooks. They are kind of very pragmatic, very holistic type of books that a lot of people can, you know, fall into very easily.
I try to write the way I talk, and a lot of people do recognize my, not my accent, but my tone of voice when they meet me in person. They're like, but you're like the same person.
Right.
Yes.
The things you put on paper are the same things that are coming out of your mouth.
Yes.
And then you also do, since we're talking about your writings, you also do digital books as well.
Mm-hmm.
So can you talk about that and kind of how, you know, where that came from and kind of maybe where that's going?
The digital workbooks first started I have to think back in terms of all the dates. I think I started my first one in 2010, although it was coming from classes that I taught starting in 2009. I think this is right. And originally they were just the class notes for courses that I was teaching online. And they were, I think the first one was $11.95 or something like that. They're fairly inexpensive for those who are working in locations where a pop or a soda costs about $1 or $1.50.
Mm.
They are inaccessibly priced for people around the world, if we include all of the world. Mm. But I did want to keep them at a price point that was less expensive than the full-length book. They weren't a direct competitor to the book, but they were sort of a supplemental. This is the stuff that didn't make it into front-end Drupal originally.
Seem very targeted as well.
Yeah.
Right.
Really specific classes dealing with really specific problems. And then these were just the notes that came out of those classes. Mm-hmm. And then I started to expand on conference presentations. So a 1-hour conference presentation might become a 6-week online class, which would become a workbook. So I started thinking more ways to put out the same content, but in short form or long form, less contact with me, like a PDF workbook is virtually no contact with me, or a lot of contact with me in terms of a workshop. And sort of like an accordion or a squeeze box. You've got a lot, you've got a little. What are the different ways that you can take that content and pull it apart or push it back together to make it more accessible to people or to give them more access to me? And then the next big jump for me, which I don't regret it at all, but I sure learned a lot of lessons about delivering content online. In 2011, we had the launch of Drupal 7, and I put together a year-long training program whereby people paid upfront for a different site each month for the year of 2011. And that was, I will say, perhaps affectionately, perhaps rudely interrupted by the Canadian federal election, which I was a candidate in for the Green Party, and it completely derailed the program. But what I'm really happy with how I dealt with the massive interruption. I think those who took me seriously on my offer got a lot of value well beyond what they would have with what I had originally intended to do with the program. But it made me realize how utterly frustrating it was to build a Drupal site. One of the workbooks, so the way the course worked was I built out a site and then I gave the participants step-by-step instructions on how to build what I had built. So they got a copy of the site. They got essentially an install profile, kind of. And then they got a workbook which detailed step-by-step what I'd done so that they could rebuild what I had already done. And the one on working with rich media, so it didn't even get into videos. It was just building out galleries. Mm-hmm. And adding slideshow carousel effects, it was over 100 pages to explain how to build a single Drupal site with a theme. And it just was frustrating for my students. It was absolutely frustrating for me because I could click together this site in a couple of days, but to actually explain how I had gone through that clicking together and explain all of the bits and pieces and all of the background information that you needed to have and how to choose a module, because we were still really new in Drupal at this point. We were only a few months in. There wasn't a lot of contrib modules that had been upgraded. So knowing how to choose the right, like, it was just this totally frustrating experience, both for me as an author, me as a trainer, and for the students. And the students, they were amazing in terms of persisting and sticking with it and helping me to really clarify what needed to go into a set of instructions that were useful. Like, I learned so much stuff doing this program, and I'm very grateful to those who participated in it, but I wouldn't want to do it again. And I would do bits and pieces again, but I wouldn't want to commit, first of all, as an individual, to year-long program. Mm. A year is a long, long time on the internet.
A lot
especially Well, and we think about responsive. It wasn't there. And then all of a sudden, we were all expected to know it. And it was within maybe 18 months that it went from no one even knowing that it was possible to everyone expecting that you could do it. And that doesn't seem like a long time, but it is when we don't even know as a technical community how to implement this stuff. And it's constantly changing and you try to learn something and then it's all different. It's just, I am so glad that I'm not trying to start from zero today. And Mike, with the program that you're running, I am so impressed that you are able to get your folks up to speed as quickly as you are, because it's really, really hard to learn this stuff today. And that's, I think I always had a little bit of humble in me, but I have a lot more humble in me now. It's hard work to learn this stuff from zero. So the packages that I put together for that program are now available as individual products. So you can buy the workbooks. But they're not the silver bullet that people are hoping they'll be. So that's the next piece that I'm working on. And I can go one of two directions. One is to work on more silver bullets, and the other one is to back away from the silver bullet concept and instead go in the workflow direction. There's still a lot of people that I work with who they're not doing backups. They have no idea how version control works. And when something goes wrong, they have no idea how to get back to the point where things were working. And especially when you're working, even if you're working in a sandbox site, you're working with a live database. There's no undo. You mess up a view, it's dead. It's, you know, unless you've cloned it, there's no way to undo a lot of that work in Drupal. So I can either go the silver bullet route of here's your packaged and finished site, or I can go back and start helping people with the fundamentals.
Yeah, I've found that starting to learn Drupal today, it's hard. For me, it seems like it would be a lot harder to start from zero and learn Drupal now, only because the community has done a really, really good job of reaching out to other open source communities and leveraging their work. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of these satellite technologies that kind of are constantly involved with Drupal, but aren't specifically Drupal.
Yep.
So, you know, back in the day, like when I started, and I know the same's with Andrew, and it's probably the same with you. If you could, you know, pick up Drupal, if you knew some PHP, you could dive in and be a contributor almost immediately.
Yeah,
yeah.
And granted, you know, HTML and some CSS and maybe even a little bit of JavaScript. But today, the situation is almost completely different because, you know, there's jQuery, there's responsive, there's CSS3, there's
I remember teaching at a college and someone saying to me, so do you think this Ajax thing is going to take off? And I was like, not likely. Right? Right. Yeah. This is my ability to predict the future. I thought that Ajax wasn't going to take off. Now, technically, I was right. It didn't.
Well, right. Okay.
I guess a flower by any other name, right? It's still a different flower.
So, I mean, this is actually kind of a nice segue to one of the other things we wanted to talk to you about. Was you ran a program last year called PHP for Drupal 8. Actually, I've seen it by a couple different names. And actually, the one that's on the website I like the best, which is Serious PHP for Real Drupal Developers. And I'm really, you must have gotten some people complaining about that, about using the word real Drupal developers in there. But
I didn't actually. People were pretty stoked about it.
Well, that's awesome. I mean,
may have complained. They just didn't complain to me.
They just didn't let you know. So why don't you tell us about, you know, what that was and what the plans are for that possibly moving forward? Because for someone like me, at the time, I was seriously considering it, but I just couldn't get my ducks in the row to make it happen.
Yeah. So this was, for people who aren't aware of it, and I'm assuming it'll be most people won't know about this one. The way that this program came to be was originally as a DrupalCon Munich workshop. So this was originally planned as a one-day workshop that Lorna Jane Mitchell and myself were going to, well, we had proposed it to DrupalCon. And the one-day workshop was going to be PHP for Drupal developers from a PHP expert who knows nothing about Drupal. I don't think, yeah, when Lorna and I first talked about this, Lorna had never installed Drupal. She knew virtually nothing about it, but she is a, and I'll get all the certifications wrong, so I don't want to, my apologies right off the bat, because I'm sure these aren't the right ones, but she does Zend type certifications and other Drupal, sorry, other PHP frameworks. So Lorna is a PHP developer, and she knows about object-oriented programming, which becomes more relevant for Drupal 8. She also has been doing some work with the Symfony folks. She put together Symfony Live, or helped to coordinate Symfony Live in London, and has written, I have to turn to the side here to find it, her first book is called PHP Master, Write Cutting Edge Code, and it's co-authored with a couple of other folks. And what I've known Lorna, we first met in 2008. And what I really like about her is her no-nonsense approach to programming. It's really accessible and very practical and also a little bit fun. So I wanted to bring her into the Drupal community for, I find that Europe tends to be more developer and implementer focused. And I find that North America tends to be more evaluators and novice to intermediate site builders. So I felt that this was a good fit for what the European DrupalCons typically attract.
That's really interesting. I've never heard that before. I've never heard that type of breakdown of European versus North American DrupalCon.
And for me, it's like they're different sizes, right? So you typically get, I think it's what, 60%, 70, 75% of the attendance in Europe. And it tends to be, just from a money point of view, the developers seem to be able to afford to get themselves to Europe more so than someone who's site building on a volunteer basis. It's just, they're a little bit more committed to the community. So I felt that it was a good match. Now, it didn't get selected, and I'm not bitter about it at all. I don't mean that in a sort of ironic and funny backslap kind of way. Because what it did was it gave us the opportunity to think about how can we pitch this program to the community. And Lorna knew she was booked up for all of the fall except for the month of September. So what we said was, instead of offering this as a one-day class in August, let's do this as two half days as a webinar in September. And then we started talking about, well, who's our target market and how can we make sure that we get the right kinds of people into this class? Because we knew we wanted people with Drupal experience who could ask really specific questions about the code base from a PHP perspective. So we did a little bit of math. I decided that a really high price point was the easiest way to filter out people. And the reason why we wanted the filter was because we didn't want to teach the basics of PHP. We wanted to be able to get into the advanced part, and we wanted the Drupal developers to be able to ask questions of a PHP developer on the implications of some of the things that were going in, especially around Symfony. And we wanted them to be able to say, and this is where I am not at this level, but like, why is PSR0 important? How is this going to affect speed? What does this actually mean if we implement it things this way versus that way? And also with the upgrade, so Symfony coming in and also the language update, we've been working on sort of, you know, generally early PHP 5, and now we're going into some new magic methods, and we've got other things available to us which we haven't had available to us. How do you actually implement that stuff? Lorna has those answers from a PHP best practices point of view. So we put together the class. I knew I wanted it to be the right kinds of people in it who had the right kinds of experience. So we priced it per company. And my hope was that within each company, we would get a mix of senior and possibly junior people, and that the senior people would be able to mentor their junior people, even if they didn't have sufficient PHP experience. It worked really, really well. From a number of companies' point of view, we were below what I wanted, but we had over 100 people in this class. And that was across, I think it was 7 or 8 companies in the end. So I allowed the course to run, even though we didn't hit my minimum target. And the people got so much out of it. They were excited about PHP. They were asking really great questions. And I think it really helped to have a group of people that wouldn't, outside of a DrupalCon, normally have an experience to learn together. It offered them a space to learn together, which I'm really proud of.
So was this PHP was it specific to the Drupal code base, or was it PHP that Drupal developers might want to consider taking advantage of moving forward?
It's essentially one of Lorna's intro to PHP object-oriented programming 1-hour conference presentations, but blown up into a 3-hour, so a half-day workshop. And then the second one was more symphony and Q&A with the other people. So it was, she had some examples into the Drupal code base, but it was basically how to PHP by a PHP developer with a room full of Drupal geeks.
Right. So it's probably the vast majority of all the questions and discussion revolved around
Drupal.
Implementing what Lorna was teaching.
That's right.
Drupal.
And it also meant that the people who were in the class, they knew all of the examples that she wouldn't be familiar with in terms of saying, oh, so how does that refer to? And then they would find the line in the API documentation, or they would find the line in the code base and say, this is how we do it. Mm-hmm. Would you recommend moving towards this thing you're talking about, or should we leave it? But they could ask the questions that she was then able to bring her, not that it's clean or pristine, but she was able to bring her naiveness around. Yeah. Unbiased. But it's like, but it was this genuine, scary experience for Lorna, because she's asking, you know, she's being essentially being asked to review a code base that she's never seen. And in front of 100 people live, right? But it was also this really nice fit in terms of the group coming together as a group of experts, coming to an expert where the expertise had, they didn't have zero overlap, but the overlap was based on passion for excellence, not based on a specific set of information. And I just, it was really, really neat. I really loved doing it this way. And again, I think I would do it this way again. The price point was great for organizations. I did not heavily promote this workshop. It was essentially individual emails to individual companies with, I think I had maybe one or two posts to plan it, but I did not promote this workshop heavily because I knew it was a weird course that needed the right people in the audience to make the course work, because Lorna wasn't there to teach Drupal and teach PHP. She was there to teach PHP to Drupal experts.
Yeah. I mean, I heard about it through, I don't know if it's an email from you. I have a feeling it was Doug Van.
Mm-hmm.
Who, if you're involved in the community at all, it's hard not to know who Doug Van is. But it was my understanding that this would be an excellent course to take for developers who kind of want to get a head start on their knowledge base for developing for Drupal 8.
That's right. That's how we pitched it. And right. One of the things that I also encouraged, and there was no secret about this, any company or any individual could put together a group of people. And what I wanted was fewer contact points. So one of the things that the Portland user group did was they opened it up, and their sort of point person was Open Sorcery. And then anyone from the Portland community, or really anyone around the world who wanted in on this course, could sign up through the Portland user group. And Doug was another company who looked to put together a group of people who couldn't individually afford it, but personally were really interested in it. And I loved that that approach to it, because it meant that I only had to create 8 user accounts. I didn't have to create 100 and something user accounts. And then each point person could sign up as many people from their organization as they wanted to. Stanford University was another one that had a really neat approach to it. They have, I believe it's called the Jasper Group. So they've got a group internally that reviews RFPs and helps out all of the departments. And any money that gets paid into that group is available to go back into the Drupal community. I may be simplifying it, but that's my understanding of how it works. So they used that money to sign up for the PHP for Developers course. And then we had, we must have had at least 20 or 30, I think, people from Stanford University, various abilities, but they were able to come together as a group and see one another and interact with one another, and then also interact with the larger learning community. And I mean, it's still pretty small at 100 people compared to how many Drupal experts we have out there. But that was, I loved that energy with people having a team or a gang or a posse that they were able to not just be there on their own. They could, they had the option to back channel within their own community if they had questions that they didn't want to ask to the larger group.
So another thing that you mentioned on the website, I believe something I heard early on, was that if all 25 seats were sold, then the course materials would be released to the community.
That's right. When I first talked to Lorna about it, we knew that this would be her material. This was based on her book in terms of the PHP. I always have to turn around and look at the title. The PHP Master Book. This was her content, her material, but my learners and my community, if that's a fair way to say, if I'm allowed to claim the Drupal community.
There you go.
But this wasn't going to be both of us preparing the content. I obviously supported Lorna, but it really is her material. So one of the first questions that I asked when we were putting this together was, do you know how much it would cost for you to never be able to teach this class again or never make money off of it because the curriculum was open source and everyone else was delivering the class? And we threw around, on the one hand, I mean, if you do the math out, it's a pretty ridiculously high number. But on the other hand, if you think about how much money you might make over the lifetime of a class, it's actually not that ridiculous. And if you think about licensing fees that you might have made in more of an aqueous sense, of they've got a piece of curriculum and then they get paid each time someone teaches that, she was going to completely abandon revenue streams for this content. Of course, she would be allowed to teach the content as well, but she was giving up the potential to earn exclusive money on this class. And it didn't take long to come up with a number of what's fair for a piece of curriculum that you may never be able to make money off of again, because as soon as someone else teaches it, they have the ability to, or potentially have the ability to allow that information out. You lose control. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that there's enough people out there thinking about the upfront costs of curriculum. And this was sort of my way of saying to the community, it's expensive to put together a workshop, and it's something that deserves careful thought and careful attention.
Is it?
And I
hadn't noticed.
Yeah, yeah. But also, what would it mean? So one of the things that we knew, if we hit that 25 company mark, one of the things that we knew we would have to put together is also the instructor guides and what are the expectations around the classroom delivery or the experience of this content. Because as a trainer, you don't need to have expertise in the content you're delivering. Sometimes it's better if you don't, but you certainly need to know what the sticky points are, what should be easy for the class, what might be hard for the class. You need to know how to give an excellent experience, even if you're not a subject matter expert yourself. And we knew that that piece would be above and beyond what Lorna would need to prepare for herself to deliver the workshop.
Mm-hmm.
So we put together the class. We didn't hit our minimum to release it as an open source piece. And I'm not sure that as a one-day workshop, it's the right way to experience that information for someone who's new to Drupal development. I think it was perfect for the experts to be immersed in it and to have time together away from work to learn as a team. But I don't think that it's something that I would want to give to someone to sit down and have to watch as 6 consecutive hours of content. So I don't know that it will ever aim to raise enough money to be released as open source content. But certainly I know, and Lorna knows, what that dollar figure would be. And that was a really good exercise for us to go through as content developers and trainers ourselves.
So I guess the big question is, will you and Lorna be doing this class again? Is it something you've even discussed?
We haven't talked about it in terms of setting a date, but certainly Lorna's schedule, she had September available, and then she was in September booked into February. So she had October booked, she had November booked, she had December booked, she had January booked, and she was taking slots as of February. So I'm sure that now we're in January that she is now booked through, I bet, to the spring, which is, it's fantastic. It's, I love to see people succeed like that. And it's really exciting. It was an amazing opportunity to work with her. But I don't know when the next opportunity would be for us to co-deliver this material in terms of me coordinating the signups and registrations and her actually having time to deliver that content.
I mean, this just seems like the type of course that, you know, any open source community, but the Drupal community specifically, needs in order to really make the transition from Drupal 7 to Drupal 8, or, you know, pick major version to major version, to kind of reduce the friction. This is good information for module maintainers, for maintainers, for, you know, basically anybody. Yeah, so I'm kind of surprised. I was hoping secretly, I should have asked you before we started the podcast, but I was secretly hoping that you were going to say, you know, yes, we're definitely going to do it again, and we just don't have the dates yet, but I'll put my vote in there.
I think it does need to happen again. I know that Lorna hasn't committed to being in Portland, but she sent me an email and asked what we were going to be doing in Portland, because she's hoping to come across for Symphony Live as well. It's, we haven't submitted anything. I'm just not sure that it's the right way to consume material. So I guess the other it's not a secret, but the other thing I'll let you in on is once a year I do an annual, how am I doing and how do you want to learn stuff survey with my mailing list. Mm-hmm. And the answers are coming back at this point that it's really hard for people to commit to a live experience in terms of a webinar delivery. So my hesitation is more around people's schedules, both Lorna's schedules and our learner's schedules, and being able to carve out the time. I loved the the team and community delivery of that information, because we, like I said, we had over 100 people participating in that. We had an IRC back channel, and then she was delivering through a webinar, and it was just, it was so much fun. But I don't know how realistic it is, and I don't know how scalable it is. And it could be that a series of video tutorials or a series of blog posts or a series of even Drupal.org hand pages are a more accessible way for people to consume that content. And that's where I want to make sure that in the next iteration of this course, and someone needs to do it, whether it's me or someone else or Lorna or whoever, like, this information needs to be out there. But is it really the kind of information that should be sitting behind a paywall? And is it the kind of information that is best consumed one day or two half days at a time? And I think that there needs to be, people shouldn't wait for us to do it. That information needs to be out there. But I think that we should be careful about curriculum sitting behind a paywall that is inaccessible to the community when the community really needs to have that information.
Right. So how do you, as far as actually doing the webinars, and this is kind of a little bit of a side topic, but
yeah, sure.
I mean, they're all side topics.
Yeah.
I've always found that I do not, as an instructor, I do not like doing webinars.
They suck. They suck for the students. Yeah, they suck for the instructors. They just suck really hard.
And silence from the people who are attending.
Yeah, it's, they're really, really hard to do.
Okay. Your answer, your previous answer, it started out as that you were, that it was the way, it was almost like your preferred way to do it.
It's easy.
I must have misunderstood what you were saying.
No. It's easy to pitch a webinar. People understand how to show up at a specific time. But the webinar experience as a learner, the webinar experience as a teacher, it sucks to talk to yourself for an hour. What I really liked about the PHP for Developers class is that we didn't try to get people to interact in the webinar space. We set up a the channel's still open. No, I mean, I, just because I have it set to favorites, I'm the only one logged in right now. But we had an IRC channel on Freenode called PHP for Developers. And that's where the class interaction happened. So Lorna basically talked to herself for maybe units of like 5 to 15 minutes at a time. I would handle the back channel and then interject on the webinar if I needed Lorna to go back in and look at the IRC channel. So it was more like, do you guys know about the Mystery Science Theater 3000, the MST3K stuff?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was like the IRC channel was the dudes who are MST3K, and Lorna was delivering the movie that we were watching. So it was, and Lorna had a lot of fun with it. Like, it was actually a lot of fun, but it's a horrible way to try and learn things if you've only got five people in the webinar and you're all trying to interact and you're all trying to talk at the same time. And then you have this awkward pause where you're not sure if people are checking their email or if they're like, it was just, it was such a different experience than what I'm used to as a webinar delivery person. But webinars, like I said, they're easy to put together in terms of show up at this time, I will tell you some stuff, and then we'll be done.
Yeah. They're low, but that's also what is the worst part about it, because there's a low level of effort necessary to commit to it.
Yep.
And then if you don't put a lot of time and energy into committing to it, then when you're actually in the webinar, it's very easy to, you know, walk away for a few minutes or check your email or do other things.
That's right.
That's why all attendees should wear shock collars.
Yes. Shock collars. And just, you got to keep the video camera on them at all times.
Yeah.
To be able to see their faces. So. All right. So, I almost feel bad because we've talked about something, we've been talking about this for the past 15, 20 minutes, something that's already happened. and that we're not sure it's going to happen again, but how awesome it was. So we're like,
sign up when you see my stuff.
I know, exactly. Yeah. So I'd love to see you guys do it again. And even at that price point, I mean, it's completely reasonable knowing that you can bring as many people as you want.
Yeah. And people took advantage of it. And I loved it. It was sort of a, like, there was this initial hesitation of like, seriously, as many as like, yep, you're creating the accounts, you create as many as you want to. And we did, we had over 100 people signed up for the class and it was recorded. So the company was able to download the video and share it with people who couldn't attend for the entire piece. We had people, so Lorna's in England. We had people showing up at 6 o'clock in the morning on the West Coast in Portland and San Francisco to attend PHP classes for Drupal. Like, this was hardcore in terms of your participation requirements, but people got really into it. So I don't want to say never again, but we don't have a date planned at this point.
All right. Well, let's move on then, so we can stop having people be angry that they missed it. So I wanted to do one, one kind of fun thing with you today. Since it is our first episode of 2013, I thought it'd be fun to look back at 2012 and have each of us pick what we felt was kind of our favorite Drupal thing from 2012. Community-based thing or some amazing new module that came out or an announcement or whatever. So I'm going to put Emma, since you're a guest, obviously you should go first. You should have that honor.
So I've got kind of a weird thing. And this is one that is professionally really important to me and personally something that I really struggle with what the right answer is. You're like, huh, this is going to be great. What's this one that she's going to bring up? Perhaps obviously from this combination, it's the community code of conduct. And the reason why it's a highlight for me is that it's something that people who've spent time with my onstage persona and have gone back and maybe I don't want to say it this way, but have gone back to the beginning of my presentations, you may have seen an evolution in how many F-bombs I've dropped on stage and how appropriate or inappropriate, how sexualized or how business-friendly my presentations were from the beginning of the conference presentations that I did, and not DrupalCon presentations necessarily, but more in my larger open-source community. And I've really struggled with it because I have a potty mouth, and I think that personally, a lot of really inappropriate jokes are hilarious. But I also want to have a professional community whereby there doesn't need to be sexualized content to have a good time. There doesn't need to be drinking. There doesn't need to be any of the stuff that I may personally find humorous. Like, I've got these two different sides to me. And I thought the community code of conduct and the way it came into being as a start of originally a series of don'ts and then a series of do's, and the way that the community riled against it, but then came together and presented something that was a document that I think the Drupal community can be proud of, and that I hope is something that we can take into conferences and know when we're dealing exclusively with our friends in our own little bubble. But when do we also want to realize that we need to step out of that bubble? And just because we've known each other for years and years, and in some cases a decade, when can we be professionals and really put our best foot forward? And that includes the time that we spend outside of the conference room when we're out drinking, and how can we include more people in our community? So for me, it's the Drupal Code of Conduct.
That's a really good answer.
Thanks.
And I'm sitting here, I'm trying to find a link as we as you're talking.
Is it drupal.org/COC? I'm not
see DCOC. That was last updated in 2010. I know that's not it.
No.
But the one that was done this year, wasn't the one that was done this year more of a DrupalCon code of conduct?
Yeah.
Or new, it was specifically for DrupalCon.
It specifically was, but I think it does, as I try and talk and type at the same time, code of code.
I'm doing the same thing. But the thing about the discussion, I mean, it for me, it was just the discussion that was really just amazing. Because there were so many like really, really intelligent comments and points of view regarding the whole evolution of the DrupalCon code of conduct.
Yep.
So that's I'm jealous. Your answer, fantastic. So.
Thank you.
I
pasted in the wrong. There we go. URL pasted into the document.
Fantastic. Andrew, can you top it?
I don't know about top it. But I have an idea for 2012, and that was the Drupal core office hour specifically pertaining to Drupal 8.
Ah, nice.
So for those of you who may not have participated, it was essentially a bunch of people all said, we're going to be on IRC at this time, and if people want to work on tickets or work on code or have questions about it, you can come in and we'll help you. And it was just a really nice system for experienced people and newbies all together to kind of hop in and move Drupal 8 along.
Yeah, that's another great one. And the URL for that is DrupalOfficeHours.org.
There we go.
And that's still going on. And that's we actually use that in our course this year. And part of the lab hours, that was something that students can do. And it's really kind of cool to watch someone who hasn't been using Drupal for more than a month or two, you know, be able to find a mentor and an issue and kind of just work their way through it to the point where that issue is, you know, closed at the end of the day.
Yep.
So that's another good pick. So mine, both yours are very, it's like touchy-feely, but they're just very nice things. Mine's a little bit more...
Or not touchy-feely, as the case may be.
Yeah.
That's true. Yours is definitely not touchy-feely. For me, I think... I actually had three of them. And even as I'm sitting here talking now, I'm thinking about changing, but I think I'm going to go with my first, my gut instinct. And that was kind of the rise of Drupal Commerce, as I said. I realize it's been out for more than a year, but I think Drupal Commerce, especially with the latest version of Kickstart, it's really going to introduce Drupal, the Drupal project, to a much wider community.
Yeah.
I just think the way the code was written, it's literally almost, in my mind, it's a example of best practices building a distribution and best practices for leveraging things that Drupal already gives you. You know, why create your own list pages when you can just create all your lists out of views? Why have your own, I'm using air quotes here, conditional actions when you can just leverage the rules module?
Sure.
It was just a really nice way for a lot of things to come together and work really well. And the more I use it, the more like I love it.
Well, it's almost like the golden child of Drupal 7 right now, I would say. It uses all those technologies together in a way that I'm like, oh, this is why we spent so much time working on this.
Right. Exactly. I'm gonna stick with Drupal Commerce. The other two that I was thinking of, one of them was just distributions in general.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I know distributions have been around for more than a year, but it seems like this year is when they've really started to take hold. And they're but as a result, our community is growing, not because of Drupal core, but because of particular distribution. So.
Well, and a lot of the newer distributions, I don't know. I feel like they're actually adding more, because a lot of the older distributions, I'm not going to say any names, make me want to punch babies. I had to work around them a lot more than if I had just done it myself, whereas the next generation of distributions are very baby friendly and I don't have to work around them as much.
Well, maybe that's, you know, then maybe that's a better answer then, is, you know, the second generation of Drupal distributions.
That works for me.
A lot, like you're saying, a lot of the first generation Drupal distributions were kind of everybody's first try. And as with anything else, the first time you do something, you make a lot of mistakes, and you're always thinking to yourself, if I had to do this again, I would change that, make this better.
Yep.
And we're not starting to get a lot of that.
Anyway, you can't all right, hear me nodding, right. But I am totally in agreement with Andrew about the distributions. It's just having written the instructions step by step by step by step on how to create a gallery in Drupal. We need, as much as we need the very abstracted modules that allow you to do, you can build anything with this stuff. We need to go back and not rethink, because there's been a lot of thinking done about it, but we need to go back now and help people with some pre-assembled building blocks. And I think that distributions are a perfect way to do this. I'm trying to think of there is another one, and I'll find the URL and give it to you for the podcast, but there's small development shops, like site builder companies, that are coming up with their own set of interchangeable, so like adding a calendar widget or adding a gallery widget or things that you can snap together, but aren't, you don't need all of them in your distribution to begin with. And I think that was the problem we saw in the first version of distributions, that they were too, not hard-coded, but they were too preset. So you had to do all of the things and you couldn't extend right on top of them. And that's what I really like seeing in this latest version of distributions, is more of a mix and match feel. Definitely. And ability to extend, because we've abstracted everything so much, the ability to snap things together in our own ways, but with better starting points.
Yep.
Yeah, it's the Drupal App Store. I think what you're referring to is where the distribution gets you kind of a base level, but then you can, you know, go into a configuration page and say, oh, I'd like the calendar, like the gallery, and I'd skip the next two, and I want this last.
Yep.
That concept, yeah.
Next up, we need to find a way to have distribution mating. So you could say, I want Kickstart, but I also want one of the open government ones, and merge those together.
The one I'm thinking of is Open Outreach.
Oh, okay. I haven't played with that one too much. Although I think, didn't we use that, or I think we tried to use that. Andrew, maybe you can fill in the blanks here. Did we try and use that for our last Coding for a Cause event?
Yeah, I believe we did for at least one of them.
Right.
And it's built on Debut.
Right. You know what? I actually think we were using an old... I think the latest version is built on Debut. I think there was a previous version that... I don't think we were using the one that was built on Debut.
No, we weren't.
Right. Okay. Shall we move on?
I think we shall. See, now I have to scroll through my notes. Well, you caught me completely not prepared.
That's okay. Real quick, let me just mention, Emma Jane, are you going to be in Sydney by chance?
I am not, unfortunately. I thought about it really hard, and I got married over Christmas. Yay, congratulations me. Congratulations. But I decided that perhaps my honeymoon should not be at a DrupalCon, so I have reserved my vacation budget for other things.
So you have a problem with a tax-deductible honeymoon, it sounds like?
More that I wanted to spend my honeymoon with my husband, not with my community.
Right. Well, I'm lucky enough to be giving a pre-conference training in Sydney, Blue Collar Git, that will be taking place on Wednesday, February 6th, and there are still seats available, so you can go to drupalcon.org and click on the training links and sign up for that course. If you haven't heard us talk about it yet, it's a very hands-on course. We actually build Git-like structures with Tinker Toys to, you know, in order to demonstrate some basic concepts. There's a lot of hands-on. There's a lot of, you know, time to kind of, you know, get your feet wet with actually running Drupal commands, and just basically taking you from someone who has a, maybe just a very simple knowledge of version control up to the place where you can be using Git in an everyday type of stuff.
And
so check that out.
It's a good course, especially like if you've worked with some other, like maybe you've worked with SVN or some of the other setups, to really understand what Git does. Because I see so many people these days are like, yeah, I worked in SVN, I can just work in Git. I'm like, if you don't understand it, you're just kind of making the sounds of it without truly understanding what you're doing. So yeah, I think it's a big point for those types of people.
Yeah, the danger there is when you do get into trouble, you don't really know what to do unless you know what's going on under the hood a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So we have a few stories here, but I think most of them are short. I know we're probably pushing an hour right now. So should we start plowing through those?
Yep, definitely. Okay. So for our first story, we'll actually, each one of our hosts picks a bunch of stories that we found and since we had the last podcast, that we want you to know about. So our first story is, from Aloha to CK Editor blog post from Dries. Now, the thing is, I think he missed a really good pun, because Aloha could also be bye, you know, like bye-bye, isn't it? Isn't it both hello and goodbye?
I think if he had left the first word out of the title, it would have been fantastic.
Yes, actually, that would have been great. Nice and short and succinct. Brilliant, yes. I like that. So did you guys get a chance to read this one?
Yeah, this one kind of, for me, came out of the blue, but only because I hadn't really been following the initiative. I'm sure that for those people who are actually following the work in it, it probably wasn't that big of a prize, but it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. So the moral of the story is we were working with the Aloha team, and then for the inline WYSIWYG editor, and now we're changing to CK editor, which has made leaps and bounds over the past year. And Dries was kind of vague about this. I don't know if you guys have more information, but basically said from technical aspects, Aloha wasn't really working as the default one for them.
Well, it seemed like I read through a bunch of the comments, which the comments are a bit of a comedy scene.
Some are very alarmist.
Yes, very, like... A lot of arm waving and screaming, it seems like. But it seemed to me that the bulk of the issue was it wasn't when you were using Aloha doing in-place editing. Mm-hmm. It was on the back end when Aloha was being used as non-in-place editing. And kind of the funny thing about all this, which I didn't really get till I read through a bunch of the comments, was you can still use Aloha. It's just no longer the default.
Yes, correct.
So it's an important announcement and it's a big change, nothing's precluding anybody from using Aloha. It just seemed like CK Editor had made leaps and bounds, and they had some really, their APIs are a lot more robust, and they put themselves in a position where it seems like it made kind of an easy decision. So,
I think my biggest thing is, thank goodness we're getting something.
Yes. Well, that was always one of the biggest arguments. You talk to a person who works on a different CMS, they'd be like, Drupal doesn't come with a WYSIWYG by default. I was like, really? Yeah. That's your biggest qualm?
But, and they'll have a new biggest qualm now. Like, no doubt about that. They will have their biggest qualm, their new biggest qualm. But it's... I'm skimming through the comments because when I first read it, there was no posts on the blog post, and now there's a bunch. And having talked to people about it in Munich and experienced some of the frustration of the people working on the in-place editing experience, I don't think choosing an editor is the end of this conversation. I think that as the users start using it, we will see not whether it's the right or wrong decision, but we'll see what people actually need to have in their editor, in a WYSIWYG editor, and whether it needs to be more featured or less featured, or the thing that I run into most is actually working with communication departments who want to paste in Word documents.
Yes.
Oh, painful.
Well, but that's the reality of how people want to use the system. So then shouldn't we be focusing on how people actually want to use the system? I know that sounds kind of crazy. But
crazy
I think
talk. Heresy.
Yeah. I know, right? But I think that this becomes the energy and excitement and enthusiasm, whether it's positive or negative, that we're seeing around the which editor gets used isn't the real long-term implication. I think it could be anything. And I my heart goes out to the Aloha team for having put all this energy into a project and then not be the editor of choice. And I know that it's really hard to put your all into something and then not have it be the one that floats to the top. But I love the fact that you can still switch it out. It's just the default.
Well, and like you said, it's not necessarily this is the end of the book. I mean, Drupal throughout time has changed default themes, processing engines. Who knows? Aloha could be the default one in Drupal 9.
Yeah, dead silence on that one. Yep. Like, I don't want to think about Drupal 9.
Well, actually, in about three stories, we're going to have to.
Oh. All right. Next.
Okay, so our next story is about getting off the island in 2013. It's a post by Larry Garfield. Now, I haven't actually read through this one yet because I wasn't sure if there's anything you're going to quiz us on, Mike.
Well, no, this is one, and I actually almost brought this up earlier when Emma Jane was talking about the PHP for Developers course. The gist of this post, of this blog post by Larry, is that he's kind of challenging Drupal developers to, you know, leave the nest and go interact with other open source community. You know, for him, it's specifically PHP or Symfony or, you know, things that he's interested in. But he's a big believer, and it makes a whole lot of sense that there are a lot of really good ideas in open source communities that aren't named Drupal. And the Drupal community can only get stronger by going out to those communities, learning about it, and bringing some of those ideas back in, kind of cross-pollinating between open source community. So the whole gist of this is, you know, encouraging people to go to a non-Drupal conference, as crazy as that sounds. And he actually mentions that he is going to be at Sunshine PHP next month, which actually takes place in South Florida. And that's something I've been looking at for a while, but just with everything else going on, I hadn't committed. But that's, you know, it's a PHP conference where there's going to be some really big PHP brains in South Florida. I don't know the exact dates, but here's the link. Let me click on it real quick. February 8th and 9th.
Oh, it's coming up soon.
Yeah, so just about a month away.
I don't know. I think this PHP thing is a fad.
Could be.
You know, it's just blowing through.
Could be. And there's actually a symphony track.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
At Sunshine PHP. So I will put that link in the show notes as well. But I just think it's one of those blog posts that it's important. It's important enough that I think everybody should be aware. And Larry, you know, Larry's a pretty smart guy. So I tend to, when I see a post of his come across the plane, I tend to pay a little bit more attention to it.
And actually, every time I see the name of his blog, and it's Garfield Tech, for some reason I always think of the cat Garfield, yes. And then I think of robotic lasagna. It's the weirdest, like, mental path I have. But
that is quite a mental path. I've never seen. Is there actually like a robotic lasagna? Has that ever appeared in the comic strip?
Oh, I have no idea. I haven't read Garfield the comic in like 20 years.
Oh, all right.
But it would be the great arch nemesis for him because he wants the lasagna, but it can just get up and walk away and he doesn't want to move.
That's true. Sounds like you've got some drawing to do.
Oh, boy. Stick figures, watch out. How about we move on to the next story before we talk more about my artistic abilities? So we have the most followed Drupal.org issues that Angie Webchick put out.
This was just a little tweet that I saw from Webchick over the holidays, where it looks like she did a database query on Drupal.org and pulled out, or basically ranked, the top Drupal.org issues by followers. So when you go to an issue, you can now follow an issue rather than having to add a comment that says subscribing.
Yes, and people, please
stop doing that
button. Yeah.
Yes, it's right there. I mean, it's green. It's in the top right. Please do that. But what I don't believe either of you have actually looked at the list yet.
Yep.
So I thought it could be fun if you guys take a few stabs at what you think some of the most commonly followed issues are on Drupal.
One quick question. Is this core only or does it include modules?
It includes modules.
Oh, boy.
And I will say that some
of
them...
I'll go first. It's okay.
Okay. So, some of them are obsolete.
That clue doesn't really help me.
No, it doesn't.
Well, obsolete would be things like I need to delete my user account.
Well, yeah. And another one that was obsolete has to do with CCK.
Okay, yeah. Right. CCK came to first mind.
Yeah. So my initial, having not looked at this, my initial instinct was to go and ask in one of the Drupal IRC channels. And I was like, that's probably cheating. I'm not looking at the blog post, but I am asking the community. So my personal one that was going to go on this list was views in core. However, the IRC channel that I asked, with many, many exclamation marks and much enthusiasm, was token for fields.
That's it. That's number one. So
credit out to Dave Reed and Eaton for knowing that they were number one on that list.
Wait, you went to Dave Reed. That's cheating.
They were just in the channel that I was in.
Completely cheating.
All right, Andrew, now you go.
Oh, that's going to be hard. I'm trying to, one that always bites me in the tuchus quite a bit is a lot of, what is it, with entities and views.
Entities and views. I'm looking. I don't see anything specifically.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to say views.
Nice.
Well, I think you might be sort of right because it looks like down number five on the list, there is an issue, DB rewrite SQL causing issues with distinct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That'd be views.
Yeah.
That probably has to do with views.
And then one other that I'm thinking about in that area is with commerce. Commerce and views with permissions fights with each other, so you have to turn off rewriting SQL on a lot of your views for commerce.
Yeah, there's actually one views results empty for unprivileged user when using a reference product relationship.
That is the one, literally.
So that one has 159 followers.
I'm one
field
of them.
Tokens, by the way, has 350. Then I'll give you the rest of the top five or six here.
Okay.
Number two was a new theme system. And when I clicked through to it, Twig, that's at 221.
Wow.
Which is kind of interesting because Field Tokens has, you know, well over 100 more. So Field Tokens
very
is
very usable or very useful.
Number three was the one that had to do with CCK. It was state of the multi-group module, which I had never heard of multi-group. I had to do some digging there.
Doesn't that allow you to put a couple fields together into one repeatable thing?
Is that like, so that's not field group. That's more of composite fields.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right.
My CCK, eyes are bleeding right now, just that you know.
Yeah. The next one was a port hierarchical select taxonomy views, Drupal 7.
Oh.
And that anytime I use hierarchical select, my eyeballs bleed.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that one.
I just like making people give conference presentations because hierarchical is actually a really difficult word to use. And if you have to use it for an hour, you get to the point where you're just like, that thing.
This word has lost all meaning.
So I'll give you four more or five more, which I thought were interesting. So number five was the DB rewrite SQL.
Yeah.
Number six was also a Drupal Commerce one, but it was the path to marketplace functionality. So that one has to do with being able to open, to have a website where multiple people can have their own store.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of building your own Etsy website.
Made out of Drupal Commerce.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And then the next one, which I think is that we're down to seven, is port OpenAtrium to Drupal 7, which is kind of, this is probably the least surprising when I was looking at the list. Then the next one is, it's kind of a meta issue for the Drupal 8 framework initiative, which I think probably that has a lot of the Symfony stuff in there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then number eight or nine, I've lost count again, but it's for the advanced aggregator module, for a Drupal 7 version of advanced aggregator, which I guess is a fancy way. Not a fancy way, but a more advanced way of doing CSS and JavaScript aggregation. And then the last one I'm going to mention, which I just thought was kind of funny, was HTTP error zero.
Because there's a lot of
there's a lot of different ways of getting that error.
Really?
Oh yeah, yeah. It has to do with a lot of times with file permissions.
Yeah. What's a basic system setup stuff?
Yeah, basic setup. Yeah. So at this point, I think the issue is it still open? Let me see. Status is still active.
It says permissions on file folders, PHP memory limits.
Yeah, it has a lot to do with file upload. I thought that was kind of, and there's no silver bullet to fix it because it can be just a lot of
errors. Oh, I was thinking of a status code, not an error.
Oh, okay.
I was like, but they start at 100, don't they?
Yeah.
But that's not at all what we're talking about.
That's a different thing.
Okay.
And
it's a cool list.
Yeah, I like the fact that the port Twitter to Drupal 7 is ranking this high.
Yeah, yeah. And the one that actually, another one that stuck out with me, only because I've done a bunch of mapping stuff, is update Gmap to use the latest version of the Google Maps API.
Yeah, because it's almost kind of unusable at this point with the really old version.
Yeah, it's almost, yeah, pretty much. Actually, I just noticed there's another HTTP error zero one down, you know, maybe about number 15. So if you combine that one with the other one, that looks like that's going to be over 300 followers. So that would actually make that kind of number two.
Ooh.
Anyway, I love stats like this.
So I wonder how many small business owners like myself are going, really, how can I take advantage of this?
Yes.
Is there a new workshop in here? How can I deal with this list of problems?
Yes. I think the workshop would be called Solving the Top 10 Most the most popular workshop ever. And possibly 3 weeks long.
Yeah, I was going to say some of those are not the short cut and dry ones.
Get right on that, creating a commerce marketplace.
Not the silver bullet.
I was going to go for a new templating engine.
Or port OpenAtrium to Drupal 7.
No, it's easy. Although it's kind of a good segue. Sometimes I wonder, you know, should we just hold out for Drupal 8 or now we can hold out for Drupal 9?
Hopefully. I'm going to install Drupal 9 tomorrow and just start using it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. So Dries tweeted out a picture of his desktop, and note, it's a photograph, not a screenshot, of him creating the Drupal 9 branch. So it actually exists out there, people, but nothing's going on with it. It's just so we can move tickets from 8 to 9.
That's too bad. So basically, if you check it out at this point, it'll look a lot like Drupal 8.
Yeah. Yeah, it should have only recently diverged, so it would be duplicate.
There you go. But I thought that was fun. As, you know, as many times as I hear people new to Drupal asking me, I hear Drupal 8's coming out. Should we just be developing on that? Now I have actually a real answer. I said,
yeah,
no,
hold out for Drupal 9.
You should look at Drupal 9. It's going to be awesome. Anyway, that's our last story.
Yep. So our sponsor is webenabled.com. Mike, I know you've used it extensively, like with your class and some other things. How much do you love webenabled.com?
I love them. They're awesome.
I bet I love them more.
Really?
I bet I do.
What's your favorite feature?
My favorite feature is that I can email support and they get back to me and they fix my problems because I do things that I maybe am not supposed to do. And they don't, they never in the support email back say, Emma, you've been foolish. They just say, Emma, have you perhaps tried this? Or that's a great idea. Perhaps we could implement that. And then I go back into the dashboard and it's already fixed.
So what you're saying is it's non-judgmental support.
It is non-judgmental support. In fact, when I first met Salim, his family was with him and I turned to his family and I said, thank you for letting me have him. I'm so, so happy with the support that they provide. The product is really good as well. But for me, it's about the support.
So do you ever use their online chat support?
Sometimes.
I don't even bother with the email anymore. I wait till someone's there and online, and 9 times out of 10, it's Mark.
Yes. Mark.
Well, I know Mark listens to the podcast. So, hey, Mark, how's it going?
Love you, Mark. Thank you.
Yeah.
It depends on what I'm responding to. So sometimes, for example, this is like ancient problem, but it used to be that when you set up a site, and someone could clone it out, it left your original email address as the address that got notified for security updates.
Ah.
And so in that case, I just forwarded the email to help and said, hey, is there a way that we can change the way clones happen so that their email address gets put in instead of my email address? So again, it just depends on what kind of thing that I'm responding to that I need to get in touch with the support team. And if it's email-based, then I tend to email it to them.
Excellent. Yeah, they're just rock solid. And the support is, you know, as you said, I haven't found anyone who is kind of as responsive as they are.
Yeah, it's kind of borderline insane.
Yeah. A little bit, yeah.
So, it's web-enabled at webenabled.com. And for those of you who don't know anything about what we're talking about, if you do Drupal development and you want a shared dev site where you can have multiple team members working on it, go to webenable.com. Emma, I know that you probably use them for training where you will set up a site and completely just pimp it out the way you want. And WebEnabled has the ability for you to just basically give people a URL that they can click and then they can get a clone of that site. And that's extremely helpful for training, which is what I'm assuming that you're using it mainly for.
Yeah. And when I was doing the year-long program, what I was setting up for people, so remember I said it was an install profile-ish, what I was setting up was a web-enabled site that they were able to clone and then grab everything from it instead of having to figure out how to get the right system installed, how to get the server set up and how to have a dev environment and how to have all of that stuff. I was just sharing the URL for the clones on WebEnabled. And I mean, super, super impressed. Even though these students were paying me to take the class, they would, if my students were having any problems, they would sit on, set up a screen share with them to make sure that the process was working for them, for the students, to get that dev environment working properly. And I've just been, both as an instructor and as a site builder, really, really happy with the way that WebEnabled has been able to accommodate as my business grows. They are willing to look at different ways that they can enhance their service to continue to support me and my business.
I don't think I can say anything better than that.
Yep.
Thanks, sponsor.
Okay, well, now it's time for our picks of the week. Each podcast, our hosts choose a module, a theme, a book, or actually really anything they want that they think you should know about and will make your life that much better. So, Mike, how about you kick us off for your pick of the week?
All right, absolutely. And before I do, I think we might actually have a new record for like the longest podcast we've ever had.
So sorry.
If we start talking slowly, we will definitely get it.
My i7 processor is going to be crying when editing this.
All right. So I'll go pretty fast here. So mine is, it's a module that I've used before, but I actually looked back and I don't think it's been a pick of the week yet. So I definitely wanted to mention it. It's called Conditional Fields. written by or maintained by Gregorio Magini, I believe, hopefully is the correct pronunciation. Even more confusing, his Drupal.org username is Peter Poe. So I have to figure out, I have to rectify that in my head somehow. But anyway, so this module, what it does is it allows you to set up multiple field API fields, you know, either for content types or for products or for user profiles, and have one field dependent on the state of another field. So as an example, if you can have a drop-down list where, you know, one option is upload an image and another option is give us the name of, or give us the URL of an image on Flickr. And if the user selects that they want to upload an image, then you display a file upload field. If they say that they just want to enter a URL for a Flickr image, then you only display a URL field. So it makes the interface really, really nice. And there's a lot of options that you can do as far as showing or hiding and stuff like that. So anyway, that's conditional fields.
It's a very helpful module. I don't get to use it too often, but when I do, I'm like, I know exactly which module I need to use.
Yeah, it's a huge time saver, because I think in the olden days, I'd be looking at jQuery.
Yes.
And it's probably you know, not terribly difficult to do that stuff in jQuery. But anytime you can have it in the configuration where it's obvious that something's going to happen, the better.
I don't know. It's not that complex, like you said, but it can be a real time sink. So it saves a lot of time.
Yep.
Okay, and so my pick of the week is visualizing the Drupal development history. I guess this is, who is the actual author of this one?
Dave Hall.
Dave it's
Hall.
Dave, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Yeah. So what he did is he ran a program called Gorse, and basically it goes through your version control software, and it maps out what's changed and when it changed. So it's like this really cool kind of organic looking video of the Drupal source tree up to the Drupal 7 release.
I just started playing it. Did you guys hear the music there?
No.
Oh, okay. Because it's actually got a nice soundtrack. Along
it does have a nice soundtrack.
Yeah. I just kind of like watching it. It's now replacing me just watching my fish tank. Because sometimes it's like flowers, sometimes it's like broccoli, and sometimes it's dandelions, and it's all moving around. And there are people flying around really quickly. So, it's
so
just
what
kinda...
is it actually showing us? Is it showing us commits to different directories? Is that what it's showing?
Commits to directories. The dots, I believe, are files.
Oh, okay. All right.
And then their color is their age.
Yeah, I just started it, so I'm back in 2005. This is amazing.
Yeah. It's really,
really
fun.
Cool.
And then you can
Dave.
See how things, you know, move around and like, oh, now we're getting really heavy in the profiles directory and see all those types of things move around.
So the video is about 5 minutes long. So let's just all stare at it for 5 minutes and have
yes.
5 minutes of silence so people can keep up.
Or no, we can commentate it. Misc just got a lot smaller. I wonder what happened there.
Hey, good job to Neil with two L's. There you go.
Yeah. That was a big commit. Excellent. Really glad they recruited him this year. Okay, Imogene, how about your pick for this week?
So my pick for this week has to do with a New Year's resolution that everyone should hold near and dear to them. How are your backups doing? And my pick of the week this week, I don't think has been a pick of the week in the past, but were a guest on the show back in February.
Correct.
So has it been a pick of the week?
I'm going to say yes, only because I love them.
Okay.
And I can't imagine that I haven't made them. And if I haven't made them, then it's long overdue.
Okay. So my pick of the week is for Node Squirrel. They are a backup service that was put together by Ronan and the Gorton Studios team, also the inventors of the Backup and Migrate module. And my sort of personal... perhaps mission in life is that whenever you set up a site for someone else and deploy it, please also consider setting up a backup service for them.
Yes.
NodeSquirrel doesn't need to be the backup service that you set up. It is a for-pay service, which means that it's sustainable and has a business model behind it. Yay for sustainability. And it can, it has 20 free backups, so at least you'll get a few snapshots. The big reason why I'm really pushing having some invisible service in place is because it seems like the last three clients that I've dealt with have all done a one-click update somewhere in their Drupal site, and they didn't have backups in place, and so then everything was broken, and it made me very sad. And it was the kind of thing that the client's taken over maintenance of the site, which is awesome, but had they had some kind of automated backup service in place, this problem would have been completely avoided, in that we could have just rolled back to the previous version of the database that had been backed up. So back up your databases, and please consider using NodeSquirrel to do it.
Yeah, so for the cost of one coffee, you can save yourself and your client a lot of headaches.
Yeah.
I don't want to even say almost, but it's one of those things where when I talk to clients, I tell them I will not launch your site unless there's some type of automated offsite backup.
Love it.
And I don't know, I've never really had to like get to the point where the client says no, or you're going to launch a site when I tell you. You know, they haven't called my bluff yet, I guess. Yeah. I'm
saying. The cat's kind of out of the bag if they listen to the podcast.
Yeah, but it's one of those things. I don't understand. It's crazy. Why wouldn't you? And actually, it's funny because there's actually now, I think I've used the word actually about seven times in the past sentence. So I'll try and stop that. I believe that this doesn't really have anything to do with NodeSquirrel. But I believe there's a companion module for backup and migrate that lets you back up to like your Google Drive or Dropbox, both of which are free. But again, they're limited, and I don't want to take business away from NodeSquirrel, because I'd recommend NodeSquirrel.
But doesn't backup and migrate have S3 integration, like Amazon S3 integration and all that stuff already?
Yeah, but that's a pain in the butt. You know,
fair enough. Yeah.
If you're not super savvy, you know, setting up an S3 account and getting the permissions right, that can be kind of a bear.
Okay, so I just went and looked at the backup and migrate module page. Mm-hmm. Modules that enhance backup and migrate. Number one on the list, of course, the NodeSquirrel client. But then numbers 4, 5, 6 are SFTP, backup to Dropbox, and backup to Rackspace cloud files. There's also an HP cloud option, and also the option to encrypt your backup files with AES encryption.
Right.
So lots of different options in there, some of which are low to no cost. And NodeSquirrel is also low cost. The thing that I do like about it is that it's a pretty simple thing to set up. You don't have to maintain any kind of backup account. The backups aren't going into your Dropbox. So if you're setting this up for a client, then you can set up an account for them and basically say, you need to have this in place. Trust me, 6 months from now, when you do a one-click update and it all goes wrong, you'll thank me later. But it's kind of like setting up Malum or Google Analytics for your client. I just think it's one of those services that you need to have when you launch the site. Whether or not you use NodeSquirrel, of course, is up to you. But let this be your New Year's resolution. All new sites must have backup when launched.
Absolutely. Offsite. Offsite backup.
Offsite, yes.
Yes.
Sorry. I thought that part was obvious. It's not a backup if it's not offsite, right? Right.
Yeah. I'm not sure it's completely obvious. I still have to have that conversation.
And if you haven't been able to restore from it at least once, then it's also not a backup.
Right. Well, isn't there a rule with backing up 3-2-1 that you're supposed to have three local copies? And
no, three locations twice. So no, three backups in two separate locations. One of them being remote. And I think the one is for at least once a day.
Yeah, so, darn.
I think.
Okay, so, well, it wasn't as easy as someone thought.
So what is the best feature of NodeSquirrel? Above all, that stands out?
That once it's set up, I can basically forget about it. And then when things go horribly wrong, I can remember that I've set up backups.
That's not even close to the best feature.
Okay. All right.
It's when you move your cursor around the squirrel.com interface, the squirrel's eyes follow you.
Yeah, that's kind of creepy.
No, it's perfect. Subtle. I love it. I love it. I'm doing it right now. Left. There we go.
Oh, no. Now we're going to lose Mike for hours.
And we'll see you next week.
Yeah.
That's a great pick of the week. I love, you know, Drew and Ronan. They've done a great job. It's a great product. I can't, you know, I can't stress enough how much, you know, I think everybody should be using it.
Yep. Everyone use it. That's your job.
I'll say anybody who's downloaded Backup and Migrate module, you know, you want to repay these guys for writing and maintaining such an awesome module, sign up for their Node Squirrel service.
Definitely.
Two thumbs up from me.
Yep.
Okay. It's time in that for the podcast where you can find out where you can stalk us. So Emma Jane, where can people find you online?
I am all over the internet as Emma Jane or Emma Jane, DOTNET, EmmaJane.net. And, I have to admit, I may actually be changing my Twitter handle because I've been getting a lot of complaints about the, length of EmmaJane.net on Twitter. So
you too many characters out of the 140.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you only get 140 and so many of them used for your name. So, definitely follow me on EmmaJane.net and, stay tuned for perhaps a new Twitter handle.
Ooh, you heard it here first.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to track Drupal Easy on Twitter, it's just at Drupal Easy. I'm Andrew M. Riley. Ryan, when he's done with his Arctic expedition, is Liberator with the 2.0 spelling. Mike is Ultimike, and our sponsors are web-enabled, and those are all on Twitter. I do want to say a special thank you to Emma Jane for coming out and being on our podcast and breaking all of...
the new record.
Records.
Yay!
Yes.
Thanks for having me on the show.
We're always glad to have you on. And you're the person who remembers the episodes better than we do. You threw out February out there.
That was impressive.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Also, you can find us at drupaleasy.com/podcast. There's all the show notes, links. You can leave comments about how awesome I am. We're also in iTunes and Miro, and we're also now in Stitcher. So you can listen to us on pretty much any type of mobile device out there.
I was checking out Stitcher over the break.
Uh-huh. I haven't used it.
It's actually pretty cool. You know, the way I think about it as Stitcher is to podcast as Pandora and Spotify is to music.
Okay.
You don't have to like subscribe or download. It's kind of just like a radio, but not for music, but for podcast.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it was, and they have really good discovery mechanisms on there. So it was, I'm digging it.
Yeah, now I'm going to have to check it out.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, if you want to see what we might be talking about in the next podcast or what didn't exactly make the cut, you can go on Delicious, I can't even say the word, and search for Drupal Easy Podcast. That's a tag. You can still apply for the Drupal Association Community Cultivation Grants.
Always.
Yes, always. It never ends. Also, there's Aaron Winborn Special Needs Trust, and remember, you can find that link in the show notes. And in an upcoming podcast, we have Jen Lampton. Stay tuned.
Where we'll be talking about one of the most followed Drupal issues, WIG.
I'm Andrew Riley, and this has been Drupal Easy Podcast number 97.
See ya!